It's All Things Considered on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Peter Biello. Having just announced he's running for president, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is planning two events in New Hampshire this weekend. The senator, an independent, is the second candidate in the Democratic primary, joining former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. He joins me now to talk about his candidacy. Welcome, Senator Sanders.
Great to be with you.
Tell us why you're running.
I'm running because our country today faces more severe problems than at any time since the Great Depression of the 1930s. And if you throw in the planetary crisis of climate change, the problems may be even more severe. And what we need to do is put together a strong grassroots movement of millions of people who are prepared to stand up and say, enough is enough. The billionaire class, which controls our economy, which controls our political life, can't have it all. We need to create an economy, and we need to create politics in this country that works for all of us and not just a very few. And in a nutshell, that's what this campaign is about.
To what extent is it possible to run a national campaign without tapping into the resources of a few millionaires and billionaires, perhaps like-minded millionaires and billionaires?
But... Well, that's a very good question. I guess we'll know the answer to that as our campaign unfolds. But let me just tell you something. We announced our campaign literally about 24 hours ago. Since that point, on our website, BernieSanders.com, we have had more than 100,000 people sign up to join the campaign. We have received 35,000 donations and have raised about $1.5 million. The average donation is $43. $43. And, I do think, I understand that the many other candidates walk into a room and they come out with $5 or $10 million, and yet we've raised $1.5 million from 35,000 different people. So it is hard to raise money at $43 a clip, but that's what we're going to have to do because the people who support me are not millionaires and billionaires.
Your candidacy has generated a lot of buzz, and some pundits have said that you're, quote, a long shot, and you're here to pull Hillary Clinton to the left. How do you respond to that?
Well, let me tell you this, just in terms of New Hampshire. The last poll that I saw, which excluded Elizabeth Warren, who has indicated she is not running, had me at 19% behind Hillary, who is far ahead of me. But if you understand that my guess is that in half the people in New Hampshire don't have a clue who Bernie Sanders is, I have never heard me speak, don't know what my ideas are, I think that's a pretty good start. So I think that as we get around New Hampshire, as we get around Iowa, as we get around this country, and more people hear what I have to say, which is that we have to rebuild a crumbling middle class, that we have to create millions of decent-paying jobs, that we have to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision and move to public funding of elections. I think as people hear the message, our support will grow. I do not hesitate for one second to tell you, of course, we're the underdogs in this race. We're going to be heavily outspent. My name recognition is nowhere near where Hillary Clinton's is. But I believe there is enough discontent out there with the economics of America today, with the politics of America today, that we could pull off a surprise victory.
You're the longest-serving independent in congressional history, but to get on the ballot in New Hampshire, the Secretary of State here says you'll need to be a member of the Democratic Party. Are you ready to officially join the Democratic Party?
Well, the problem with that is that in Vermont, you don't register as a Republican, you don't register as a Democrat, you don't register as an independent. That's impossible. Can't do it. And that's true in many, many states. But let me say this. I have been an independent throughout my political life. I won as mayor of Burlington, Vermont as an independent. I won the House as an independent. I won the Senate as an independent. And in my heart, I am an independent. But clearly, I will conform to the rules and requirements of each state to get on the ballot as a Democratic, as in the Democratic primary. So I will do what is required.
You've been critical of President Obama at times, saying he attempted to negotiate with Republicans who just didn't want to negotiate. You said they just wanted to destroy him. Many will say you're to the left of the president. So will you be able to negotiate as president with the right wing of the federal government?
Well, let me say this. I have a lot of respect and consider the president of the United States, Barack Obama, a friend. He will, I think, be remembered historically in a lot more positive light how many of his compatriots see him today. And I think he has, if you understand the situation that existed when he came into office, I think in many respects he has done a very good job. But having said that, you're quite right in what I said about the president, and this is where he and I disagree on style. The president in 2008 ran what will go down in history as one of the most brilliant and effective grassroots campaigns in the history of the United States of America, recognized by Republicans and everybody else as a brilliant campaign which took him into the White House. The big mistake that he made, in my view, is to think that he could simply cut the ties with the millions of people who elected him and then sit down with John Boehner and other Republicans and say, okay, let's negotiate some kind of honest agreement here. The Republicans had no intention of ever wanting to negotiate honestly with the president or reach any kind of reasonable compromise. Their goal from day one was to obstruct, 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 and they did that very successfully. And I think the president made a major mistake in cutting the ties with the grassroots of this country, because on issue after issue, the people supported him. But when you cut that ties, then you don't have the leverage to tell the Republicans, hey, people are watching, and you are going to raise the minimum wage. You are going to create jobs. You are going to deal with climate change, because there are millions of people out there who know what's going on, who are watching you, and will throw you out of office if you don't do the right thing. So that's where the president and I have a tactical disagreement.
Are you saying then that you would not be negotiating with Republicans in Congress as
president?
No,
of course not. I'm the former chairman of the Veterans Committee, Senate Veterans Committee, and I negotiated what was the most significant veterans health care legislation in the modern history of America. And I did that with John McCain and with very conservative Republicans in the House. So I've done that on many occasions. Of course you do that. But what you do when you sit down in negotiations, you look at the leverage that you can have. So I don't sit in a room with John Boehner and say, gee, John, I hope you can raise the minimum wage. What we say is, guess what, John? I just thought you might like to see this petition of 5 million names on it that says you guys better raise the minimum wage. You're not going to be back here in 2 years. And by the way, look out the door, because there are a million young people who are saying we have got to make college affordable in this country. Now, you can vote against my legislation to do away with tuition in private colleges and universities. You surely can. But know that those young people are going home. They're going to throw you out of office. So the point is, of course, you negotiate. If the Republicans are still in power, I hope they're not. But if they are, you do negotiate with them. But you negotiate with strength because you know, and I know, I believe, that the vast majority of the people in this country do not believe with this right-wing agenda of tax breaks for billionaires and cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and education. They have a view which is fringe. I think the view that I am expressing represents the vast majority of the American people. Our job is to mobilize those people to give the Republicans a choice that they can't refuse. And that is, they do the right thing. They stand up for working families and not billionaires, or else they don't return to office.
You've described yourself as a democratic socialist. The word socialist is really unpalatable for a large number of Americans, especially those on the right. How does that word fit into a campaign that would eventually have to reach out to moderate Americans and right-leaning Americans?
Well, then the question is, ask me, what do I mean by democratic socialism? And then I'll explain it. And the answer is, if you look at countries like Denmark, Sweden, Finland, Norway, other countries, this is what you find. You find that health care is a right and free, and it's high quality. All people have access to health care. You find that college education and graduate school in those countries is free. It's publicly funded. You find that they have an extraordinarily strong and inexpensive child care system at a time when many working class families in America can't afford child care. You find that their retirement security is stronger than it is in the United States. You find that they are aggressively moving in terms of trying to protect the environment and transform their energy systems. So I think if you look at it issue by issue, we don't have to use big words, and you say, look, we want a government that is not dominated by the billionaire class and large campaign contributors, but works for the needs of ordinary people. I think you can look at Scandinavia and other countries, and the American people will say, yeah, that makes sense. Germany last year just announced they're doing away with tuition in all of their colleges and universities. You know what? I think most Americans think that's a pretty good idea. And in many of these countries, they do ask the wealthy and large corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. You know what? I think in America, most people would like to see that as well.
You've talked about creating jobs as a way to revitalize communities, investing $1 trillion in infrastructure, rebuilding roads, bridges, wastewater plants, also $5.5 billion to youth job training programs. How do you propose paying for programs like this?
Good. Well, first of all, you're quite right. Those are exactly what I proposed. And the answer is, what happens if you don't do those things? We have a crumbling infrastructure in America today. The American Society of Civil Engineers says that we don't need a $1 trillion investment, which is what I propose. We need over $3 trillion in investment. And every day that you don't invest in your roads and bridges and water systems, and I speak as a former mayor, trust me, they don't get better all by themselves. You need to invest. Now, my proposal calls for $1 trillion over 5 years. That would create and maintain some 13 million jobs that we desperately need, because real unemployment in America is not 5.5%, it's 11%. And also, it would make our country more efficient and productive and safer. So anyone who says, no, we shouldn't invest in the infrastructure, what are they proposing? That our roads and bridges and water systems and levees and dams, airports are going to deteriorate. You have to invest. And I think now is the time to invest when interest rates are reasonably low and we have high unemployment. And by the way, when you put people to work, yes, $1 trillion over 5 years is a lot of money. Not quite as much money, I should tell you, as the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that the Republican President Bush got us into and forgot to pay for. But $1 trillion is a lot of money. But when you put people to work and they're paying taxes and they're going out buying goods and services, it has a stimulative impact on the economy. So I do strongly believe in that. Now, in terms of youth unemployment, you're absolutely right. I work with John Conyers in Michigan. We have a massive program to put kids back to work. You know why? Because youth unemployment in this country is 17%. African-American youth unemployment is far higher than that. That's unsustainable. And I would rather invest in jobs and education, which is what this bill does, than in more and more jails. Yes. So I strongly believe that when African-American youth unemployment is 25%, you have kids hanging out in street corners here in Burlington, Vermont, in New Hampshire, all over this country, kids who have nothing to do, 5.5 million kids dropped out of high school, graduated high school, no jobs at all. Many of these kids are looking, are going to end up in jail. They're going to end up on drugs. I'd rather give them constructive activities and education and jobs.
But how will it? Where will the money come from?
Good
will this
question.
Be a new tax for average Americans? A new tax on wealthy Americans? Will
Here's
this be
what
a debt?
You got. Fair question. Very fair question. Right now, you have massive income and wealth inequality in America. 99% of all new income is going to the top 1%, and you got hedge fund managers who are paying a lower effective tax rate than you are. You have corporation after corporation that is stashing their profits in the Cayman Islands and in Bermuda. And in some cases, you have companies like General Electric making billions of dollars in profit. And you know how much they pay in federal corporate income taxes? Zero, not a nickel. In fact, sometimes they get a rebate. So I think at a time of massive income and wealth inequality, when the top one-tenth of 1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, instead of doing what the Republicans are suggesting, is giving more tax breaks to billionaires, I do believe, and you can quote me on this, yes, the wealthy and large corporations are going to have to pay more in taxes, and we're going to use that money for rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, putting people back to work, and to making college affordable for our young people.
Senator Bernie Sanders, candidate for the Democratic nomination for president and senator from the state of Vermont. Senator Sanders, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much.